Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Right now, they try to get across the border or oftentimes are coached by individuals to say things that allow them to come inside the country, and the system is at a breaking point.
In my years of working for a civil engineer here in Arizona, I know that the schooling that that engineer took and the training that he was mandated to take had to do a lot with earthquakes. In Yuma County, we do have a problem with earthquakes. So I think in this area, we have some unique issues that for someone to just come in and get a license to operate here would be dangerous.
And if there are individuals who are moving to Arizona who are qualified by virtue of obtaining a license in their originating state, let them ply their trade in Arizona. Let's not throw up more red tape in front of them. And that's why we're so excited about passage of this bill.
I strongly believe that our teachers in Arizona will feel more comfortable being inclusive in their classrooms. For example, that could be as simple as a teacher reading a book to their students that might have two moms or two dads, and just having that type of curriculum weaved in very naturally so that all of our children feel safe and welcome at school.
And with us to talk about changes in the Department of Homeland Security, some of the latest legislative news in Arizona and more, are Lori Roberts, columnist for the Arizona Republic, and Lorna Romero of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Lorna, let's start off with Mike Pence's visit to Arizona. How significant is this, if at all, the fact that he has come here, that Arizona in some ways, even though Texas may argue with us, is almost becoming ground zero for these immigration and border security debates?
I mean, it's extremely important. Obviously, having Vice President Pence in the state of Arizona, I think it's twice in 1 month he's been here for a number of issues, just shows how, I mean, it's not just Texas, it's all the states along the border that are feeling the issues that are happening. And it really is the crux of immigration and trade issues, which are two key issues that are being debated nationally here locally, and that oftentimes can be polarizing issues. And so to have the vice president here with along with Governor Ducey to see what's happening along the border and to discuss how there needs to be bipartisan support in order to address these issues, in order to make sure that, one, we're dealing with these people who are coming across the border who are seeking asylum in a proper and effective manner, that's not going to impact international commerce and trade, and especially tourism, which is important to Arizona.
Lori, what does it really mean in the fact that Governor Ducey is out there and Governor Ducey has said things that people would argue might have been flip-flopping on that issue?
Well, he clearly flip-flopped last week.
But he would say he didn't.
Well, he would say that. But if you go back and listen to what he said, and I've done that several times, clearly on a Monday he's talking to reporters and explaining exactly what Lorna's talking about, how trade is our number one issue in Arizona with Mexico, and absolutely said he does not support closing the border until 2 days later when he goes to the White House to meet with President Donald Trump. Still not clear why he exactly, how that meeting came about. I'd be interested in that, by the way. But anyway, comes out of that meeting standing on the White House driveway and announces that if this is something Trump wants to do, he would be supportive of it. You know, jaws dropped all over the state over that. So it's a little bit difficult to know, you know, depending on what day of the week it is, what our national policies and what our, you know, which way we're going on this whole immigration thing. It seems like we have to get up and read our Twitter feed every day to find out what is our policy today and how to deal with this. The one thing that I would wonder about is, when is this president going to actually start dealing in a positive fashion, as you talked about, with this crisis at the border, this humanitarian crisis? One of the things I would think that he could do is bring some immigration judges down there, get more of them, and start expediting some of these hearings.
So one thing I do agree with Lori is that there has been some inconsistency on the national level of what direction we're going in when it comes to what's happening at the border, international trade, et cetera. I do think Governor Ducey's been consistent about his position when it comes to the importance of maintaining our relationship with Mexico and how critical it is to the state. Obviously, he made remarks in D.C. where there was these hypotheticals, what if a shutdown happens? What if this? Which he responded to. But he's been clear and consistent throughout this entire debate about how important it is to maintain our relationship with Mexico. It's now an issue of, where does the president stand on this? Where is the Department of Homeland Security? How are they going to handle this? And how are we going to move forward to make sure there's not a crisis of economic and humanitarian proportions in whatever approach they take moving forward?
So, Lorna, you're with the chamber. You're talking to the business community. We had Garrick Taylor with the chamber on our show last week and this week talking about, you know, the effect of a potential closure, which would be devastating, he said, on the economy. is this raising concerns, though, what the governor said the other day about a potential closure?
Not what the governor said. I think what's causing concern is just what the national sentiment and the communication that's coming out of D.C. One day we have the president saying, I'm going to shut down the border. The next day he says, I'm giving Mexico a year to come up with resolutions. And then he's tweeting again, I'm still going to consider shutting down the border if they're not doing something. And so it's that kind of inconsistency that's making the business community concerned because, as you know, supply chains are so integrated, especially here in Arizona. We have so many manufacturers that, you know, products move across the border multiple times before it's final and being sent off to its final destination. And so that's creating a lot of uncertainty. And then a complete shutdown just has an even more tremendous impact when it comes to tourism because we rely on a lot of those sales tax dollars from folks coming up from Mexico. So that's the concern, and the business community is very consistent that we need to find a solution that is not going to impact trade, especially in the middle of USMCA negotiations, which is critical, and that is not going to impact tourism and just movement across the border.
Lori, one thing the governor said, which has been this pat phrase we've heard forever, which is Congress needs to do its job. What about members of Arizona's delegation? Have we heard enough from Sinema and McSally or some of the other lawmakers about this?
Well, it seems like they are writing a lot of letters to Homeland Security and other places. But what we probably need are some people to sponsor a couple of bills and come up with a solution because it does seem clear that any long-term solution is going to come from Congress. And I see a lot of pontificating and a lot of beating of chests about what we shouldn't do and, oh, this would be an awful thing to do. What I haven't really heard is a solution to the problem. And again, on the short term, I don't see from the Trump administration any resources moving down there to deal with this problem. I read, I think it was in the New York Times the other day, that the closest immigration court in all of America to the border is in Tucson. Well, that leaves a lot of them a lot farther away. We should be shipping those judges down there. And of course, it did not help at all when we had a government shutdown and all those judges were put on furlough.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with Lori that there's a tremendous opportunity for our delegation, Republican and Democrat, to really engage on this issue and seek solutions, especially since they see all of this firsthand and take that kind of leadership position. And there's a number of different options on the table, like Lori was saying, more resources at the border and not pulling resources away from traditional ports of entry like what's happening currently, because that's just slowing down wait times at the border and slowing down commerce. When it comes to additional judges to get, you know, asylees through the process faster. And there's also the bigger immigration issue as well that we need to discuss as well. And so there's a lot of opportunity to come up with solutions. We just need to make sure that our delegation and folks in D.C. are working together on this issue versus just arguing back and forth of what's not working.
But is that getting more complicated now that there's so much upheaval at the Department of Homeland Security? We saw Kirstjen Nielsen step down over the weekend. And now, was it important that you think Vice President Pence come down to the border and be there showing some kind of leadership in this way, Lorna?
I do think so, because obviously there is a leadership vacuum at the Department of Homeland Security right now and a lot of uncertainty about who that next nominee is going to be. And our hope is that it's somebody who is going to seek solutions and work with the Trump administration and Congress in order to be proactive to deal with this issue versus more reactive and doing things that could potentially continue to harm the relationship.
Lori, this leads us to your column in the hard copy of The Republic today. I will not steal my colleague's thunder on this one. Lauren, why don't you?
Okay, so it seems to me that it might happen, that Governor Ducey may be considering taking this position. Is that what you're thinking might be going on, Lori?
Oh, I don't think he'd take it in a million years. Who would want to work for this guy? You've got a shelf life of about, what, 8 to 10 months, and during that time you're abused and you're embarrassed. Although he did handle the embarrassment last week of Trump's flip pretty well. So I think he would certainly be qualified for the job. He has shown a willingness to sort of toady under to the president.
Oh, that's the qualification.
You know,
okay.
He certainly has done that. I think that I think he'd be a fine Department of Homeland Security director. And I think if your president comes calling, you ought to go. Of course, it would never, ever, ever happen because it would put a Democrat in charge of the governor's office.
But it wouldn't be any different than what Governor Napolitano did.
That's exactly true, and that's probably why.
Lorna, let's – and obviously, Lori's column was pretty tongue-in-cheek, if not entirely tongue-in-cheek. But when it comes down to this sort of thing, I mean, is there – I just want to throw this out. Is there a position that Governor Ducey would actually consider – even though he just got reelected, we don't know for sure what his aspirations are. We really don't know because he has talked about, you know, would he want to run for Senate? He says no. He and Mike Pence are very close. That was an article in The Republic as well today. Is there something there? And even what Lori said, the fact that he talked with the president last week, is there a closer relationship perhaps with the governor's office and the White House than we even know?
Well, I do think that Governor Ducey has a close relationship with the White House, and especially Vice President Pence. He's been pretty open about that since his first term. But I don't think that necessarily translates into that Governor Ducey is looking to leave Arizona. He's very committed to the state, and he has said publicly numerous times that he's going to be here through his second term. Yes, he is a young governor. He has a career ahead of him. And so I don't know what those future aspirations are, but he is dedicated to the state of Arizona. And in the meantime, he has a tremendous value add being the governor of Arizona and being a voice on these issues. The fact that he did go to the White House last week and have that conversation with the president, the fact that he is down at the border with Vice President Pence, not a lot of governors in the U.S. have that kind of relationship. And so I think he's better positioned continuing as the governor of Arizona to talk about these key issues and being a national leader from that standpoint.
Lori, before the break, maybe a little more cynicism. Is Governor Ducey someone that – does that connection help Arizona in any way?
Connection between Governor –
with Governor Ducey. Pence and Governor and the White House,
I don't see why it would.
Okay.
I honestly don't. I do think that he is close to Vice President Pence, and if Vice President Pence were the president, I think that he would be far more interested in going to a cabinet-level position than he might be now.
I think I was on a TV program with you where maybe you said maybe Governor Ducey would be vice president.
Yeah, I did. I think that was my prediction on something, but we'll see.
That's Lori Roberts. Also here is Lorna Romero with Lauren Gilger. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap on KJZZ, which continues after this. It's the Friday newscap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ with Lauren Gilger in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests are Lorna Romero of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Arizona Republic columnist Lori Roberts. Now, Lori, earlier this week, Attorney General Brnovich talked about dark money with Tempe, issued an opinion that indicates he is saying that what Tempe did as far as trying to ban dark money may be okay, and it may be okay for individual communities to do that. In the general sense of dark money, how important is it to see maybe sort of a nonpartisan opinion on this?
Oh, I think it's terribly important, as our legislature has refused to take action. Our governor has no interest in bringing dark money into the light of day so that we can see who is trying to influence our vote. You're starting to see city by city start to do this. Tempe was the first one where an astounding 91% of the voters said, yes, we want a sunshine ordinance. And so along comes a Tucson area legislator who says, I don't think you should be able to do that because we can't do it on the statewide level. So he filed a request or a complaint, I guess it would be, to Attorney General Brnovich saying, you know, go investigate them because I think what they're doing is contrary to state law. And this was Attorney General Brnovich's response, which was, no, I don't think so. I don't think so, Representative. So yeah. I think it's a very important thing that at least will allow perhaps cities one by one to start cracking down on this, at least in city elections, until we can get to 2020 and the outlaw dirty money amendment, which is coming back.
Yeah, we'll see if it makes the ballot this time.
Yeah.
So, Lorna, this is far from a perfect storm, not even close. But there are, it does seem like more and more people in Arizona want to know a little bit more information when it comes to knowing about who is funding our elections and whatnot. How significant to you is the Brnovich opinion in any sense, at least compared to what Mr. Leach and the legislature say?
You know, and the Brnovich opinion, and it's a little bit more nuanced than some people realize, is that, you know, and this is where it gets really wonky and technical, is the City of Tempe ordinance passed before a bill went through the legislature that would have prohibited this. Mm-hmm. And so what Representative Leach asked was, are they in violation of state law? Technically, they're not, because their ordinance passed before that legislation went to effect. effect. In addition to that, that specific legislation pertained to political nonprofits. What the AG said was the way that it's written, the City of Tempe ordinance does not apply to political nonprofits. They made it clear if it does, this would have to be reinvestigated and looked at again. So I understand from the standpoint that it's an important opinion, but it's based off of a lot of technicalities. So if the City of Tempe were to change their ordinance, we're going to talk about this we're going to have this conversation again. I think transparency in elections is important, but there's a fine balance between getting transparency and freezing political free speech. To have a nonprofit organization have to disclose all of their donors that they have because they spend more than $1,000 in election just seems like government being overly burdensome into their records. So I don't think that's necessarily what people are looking for. But I do think that there's a compromise in the future on this point.
And yet, if you look at the U.S. Supreme Court opinion on Citizen United and others, it's clear from those justices who wrote that opinion and weighed in on it that when they approved corporations being able to do this sort of political speech, they contemplated disclosure. They thought it was the best of both worlds. So I'm not sure that I'm going to agree with you that there are First Amendment concerns here. I think that the voters have spoken very clearly in Phoenix, in Tempe, in polls. The justices have signaled that they are okay with disclosure. I think that that's the way this is going to head out. This is where we're going.
But you should not create a system that is going to prevent people from wanting to engage. And so that's where it becomes overly burdensome. If all of a sudden you have to disclose as an organization every donor that's ever been a member of your organization, and which isn't getting to the point where people want, that just seems like you're overreaching at that point. And then do people say, well, then we're just not going to engage and we feel like we're not being able to express our voice. So I think there's a fine line between disclosure and sunshine and then just overly burdensome regulations. And especially when it's different among different jurisdictions as well.
Well, let's remember that we're not looking for granny who plugs in $25 to her garden club and the garden club gives it to someone else and then eventually it ends up in a political campaign. There are minimums of, I think, $1,000 on the city levels and $5,000 on the state levels in the proposals that are out there. So we're talking about fairly major contributors. Do you think that, I mean, the poster child for this whole issue, of course, has been APS, who has now acknowledged what we all mm-hmm. knew all the way along, which was that they spent up to $10 million trying to convince us to elect regulators that would be favorable to APS. And, of course, we never could know about the connection at the time. Do you not think that it would have been helpful for voters to be able to factor that information into the equation as they're listening to these ads? Do you think that APS should be able to do what they did? Is it a free speech issue?
It is a free speech issue, and I do, and this is why. And I'm going to go back to the City of Tempe ordinance because that's what we're discussing right now, is if you had a group that spent more than $1,000, which in some people's mind sounds like a lot, when you're looking at campaigns, that's not a lot of money. That's probably a mail piece that goes out into a district, let's be honest, and probably a really cheap one if at that. And then all of a sudden they have this ridiculous amount of regulations that they have to follow because they spent $1,000. That doesn't seem fair. It's unfeasible for a group to do that. And so that's what I'm saying, that on the flip side, the likelihood of them engaging is going to be less likely if they say, I spent $1,000 and I have to do X, Y, and Z. And you're making it difficult for them to comply as well. Mm. So I think that's where the disbalance comes in.
Let's move on from this. The last couple of minutes, I want to give Lauren a chance to ask about actually some bipartisan movement at the Capitol the other day.
Bipartisan, can you believe it? Okay, so this LGBTQ law was repealed yesterday. The governor signed it literally within minutes. This says that now teachers will not have to avoid, quote unquote, promoting a homosexual lifestyle is what the bill said, in the classroom and specifically in teaching about HIV and AIDS prevention. Was anyone surprised that this got so much bipartisan support?
Well, you know, the Democrats have been trying to get this passed for years and couldn't even get so much as a hearing out of the Senate Education Committee. Now, all of a sudden, Equality Arizona sues, and that didn't even really seem to move anyone. And then last week, Attorney General Brnovich says, I'm not going to defend this law. You're just on your own, or the State Board of Education is on its own. And it was like lightning struck, mm-hmm. and everybody rushed, well, not everybody, but most people on both sides of the aisle rushed to repeal this thing, saying it was time. Even the Center for Arizona Policy's Kathy Hare had put out a note saying, you know, she was for this because it's a fact-based thing. And, you know, as it relates to sex education, yes, we should be doing this. So on the one hand, it was with the speed of lightning. On the other hand, it was years later than it should have been.
And I do think it's a... I think it was a great way to end the week at the state legislature, especially given the session that they've necessarily had. And I do think it was something that was probably long overdue that needed to happen. And I just want to say props to Superintendent Kathy Hoffman for making this a priority of hers when she came into office. And then I credit Mark Brnovich for making the statement that he did, because that was kind of the linchpin that kind of rushed this through. And then TJ Shope as a Republican adding the amendment, working with Democrats. I think it was a great way to end the week and get rid of an outdated law. I don't think that was even necessary back then, but it was there, it's gone, and I think that hopefully they can move forward on big issues in the next few weeks.
So well. Even better way to end the week, 30 seconds left or so. This is a really important question, Laurie. I'm looking at you seriously. What should Arizona's official state drink be?
Our official state drink?
Because we keep hearing about lemonade and margaritas. What do you think? The legislature's considering this. What would you vote for?
I'd go for scotch.
Okay. Well, I guess that can be kind of universal.
Yeah, you spend enough time at the state capitol, you need a lot of that.
Well, that can cross state lines, which is a good idea. Laura?
I vote for a prickly pear margarita.
Okay. Laura, do you want to jump in on this?
Yeah, I'm in on the – I would go for a classic margarita salt on the rim, yes.
Okay.
I love how we all have alcoholic drinks.
Laura Romero of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, Laurie Roberts, columnist for the Arizona Republic. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.